Good morning, everybody, and welcome into the Mary Griffith Show for this Friday, July 19th. It's the last you'll be hearing of me for a while, as Mary hopefully can escape Canada and make it back, because there's delays at the border with this computer virus and disruption that's been taking place all morning long, and that includes long backups at the Canadian border. So, not to my knowledge. She did talk about trying to smuggle contraband back, so we'll see.
We'll see, but yeah, I didn't know.
That'll be a story in it. Well, yeah. I just said that'll be a story in itself.
Yeah, yeah, just for the mugshot, if nothing else. But, of course, the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee. Premier coffee is roasted and delivered in small batches right to your door. Just contact Refreshment Services Pepsi. You can also pick up Harvest Ridge at the convenience store nearest to you. And, of course, as you heard the distinguished voices of the man who has his own time zone, Chuck Scholes, and the voice, rather the face, of the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County, none other than Jack Freiberg. Gentlemen, it's glad to have you back.
It's always a pleasure.
Good morning, Scott.
Yeah, another big day for the Bicentennial Commission yesterday. Little trip to Liberty for that.
We are celebrating the Bicentennial of Adams County all over Adams County, and we were in Liberty yesterday. Mark Fields is the chairman of our finance committee, and of course he's the president of the Bank in Liberty, and now the North Adams Bank as well, and he's made a pledge of $20,000 to celebrate our bicentennial. So we were there to announce that. We are out soliciting in the coming weeks other financial institutions and businesses for their sponsorship as well, and I have to tell you, it's gone extremely well. The response from our business community has been very gratifying. They see the value in what we want to do with educate, celebrate, and commemorate. And in that regard, and I should turn it over to Jack, because Jack's chairman of Educate, and we've made a lot of progress in that regard. But I do want to let your listeners know that there's going to be a book. It's going to be a history of Adams County book. We've looked at what has been done in Pike County, in Cass County. So this is like a coffee table, very nicely bound book. And we are going to solicit stories. We're going to solicit pictures. We need input from all over the county. Hopefully we'll be able to utilize the libraries, like Camp Point Library, or Mendon Library, Quincy Public Library, where people can bring these in. There's a method for doing that, and we're getting up and running as a committee to go out and solicit. But we want to tell the whole story of Adams County and tell it through the people of Adams County.
Exactly. I was just going to ask you before we hear from Jack, how close is the committee to its fundraising goal? I imagine you're getting close.
Well, I would say that we are. Probably our initial goal is $450,000, and last time I looked, I think we're around $330,000. And again, we're just really starting to reach out throughout the county for sponsorships from our business community. So we plan to exceed our goal, and if we do that, we'll try to come up with a legacy type of project that will go on. And I think, you know, the book, the website, all of those things that we develop will last as historical references. We exceeded our fundraising goal for the Lincoln Bicentennial in 2009, and that funding established the Debate Museum across the street. So we'd be open to all sorts of things. People have talked about maybe a need out at the county fairgrounds that all the county could share in. We'll just have to wait and see how much we raise, right, Jack?
Yes. Well, and we're going to be promoting it in other ways. In other words, we're going to have a booth out at the Adams County Fair.
Next week, right?
Yeah, that's starting next week. And Chuck and I are going to be out there the evening of the 26th from 4 to 6 promoting it. And we'll have some handout things and things.
We'll get some T-shirts if they can stump us on trivia, that is, or we can stump them.
Yeah, we're thinking about having some blank cards drawn up with Adams County history of trivia questions to just have a flashcard kind of thing to show people and just to have a little fun with your Quincy and Adams County history.
And if they get it all right, then they get an autographed shirt from one of you guys.
What
I'm not sure that's
sake.
Much of an incentive.
But they got to get them all right. They can't miss one. Just an idea out there. So, oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, time capsule would be ideal as well.
We're going to do a time capsule.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. We're working on that. Danielle Harrison has volunteered her. It's very interesting, the actual capsule itself. And this one's going to be a little bit above ground. You'll know it's there. We buried one in 2009 for Lincoln. It's flush to the ground in Washington Park. We did it for the 2008 for the sesquicentennial of the debate.
Okay.
So it's supposed to be open in 2058. Well, who's going to remember to do that? You know, there's not really a tickler system out there. Maybe the library, or I don't know.
Did you not leave a note, Chuck?
There is a note in there. Okay. I wrote a note to my grandchildren. I didn't have any grandchildren in 2008, but I wrote a letter to them in anticipation, and now I got a whole half dozen of them. So, we're going
to
have a time capsule, and we'll be very interested. Like, you have a very educated listenership. Whatever suggestions people might have, what should we put in there that really sort of exemplifies 2025? You know, what was life like in Quincy? That sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see, and maybe get the school kids involved with, you know, writing a letter to themselves in 50 years.
Sure. Because a lattice fry is not going to last 50 years.
Lattice fries should go in there, clearly.
I don't know about lattice fries, but I know I don't want last another 50. That I'm sure of.
Yeah, I won't either.
Well, Jack and I are both miracles of modern science just to be here today, so who knows?
This is true. This is very
true. We might get
true.
Other parts replaced, Jack.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm done with replacing parts.
I imagine so.
That seems reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. We wanted to talk, though. You were going to talk a little bit about education.
Yeah,
right.
Because I'm chairman of the education committee on the Bicentennial Commission, and we're working on three or four different things here. Number one is we're working on this ruler that we've been working on for some time that's going to be distributed to all the school children of Adams County. So we're talking about between 10 and 11,000 rulers. And that has items on it like, when Adams County was founded and things like when Paul Tibbetts dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, you know, which was not only significant for Quincy, obviously, but was significant worldwide and was the demarcation of the end of the Second World War.
So no native of Adams County had more impact on world history, obviously, than Paul Tibbetts.
Exactly. And couldn't talk about it for the longest time either, you know, with everything going on with it.
You know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, the different generations look at that a lot differently. Okay?
Sure.
Because one of Tibbetts, I remember him quite distinctly saying when he was here in 2000.
2000.
He talked a little bit about when he was doing on that signature book tour that he was doing then, which was, I thought, absolutely remarkable. But anyway, when he was here, he was talked about the younger generation, how they would talk about, how could you have killed all those people? And Tibbetts' comment was very simple, and I thought so to the point. I didn't think about how many people I killed. I thought about how many American boys' lives I saved.
Exactly.
And that's the difference in the generation's viewpoint there.
Exactly.
My dad was in the Navy, so I might not be here.
Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people remember back then just the estimates from the Defense Department.
They're talking a million casualties.
They were talking about a million casualties.
Yeah, the war would have gone on for at least two more years.
Well, he was an amazing person. And as Jack said, he came in 2000, we had a Millennium Commission and we said, okay, who's the person that has had the most impact? And we clearly decided it was Paul Tibbetts, and we invited him, and he came. He was here for about 3 days. He went to the Veterans Home, and that was a wonderful. He also was down on the riverfront. He really never wavered in duty, honor, country. That was totally him. And his book, as Jack mentioned, he was picked because he was such a great pilot. He was their best pilot. He flew Ike, he flew Montgomery over in Europe. But he was in charge of everything when it came to delivering that ordnance. So construction of the plane, he oversaw that. The selection of the crew, the security, the timing, everything. So, a brilliant guy, and He loved being back in Quincy. The guy that was with him from the publishing company said he'd never seen him that relaxed. Usually he's on edge because people will come up and confront him. He said he never felt that way in Quincy.
And you know, the funny thing about that is the fighter wing that he was attached to that dropped the bomb, it's based not that far away from here over at Whiteman Air Force Base.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought he trained in Wendover, Nevada, because of the secrecy there.
He probably did. He probably did, but the I think it's called the 577th.
That's the stealth bombers over there.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that's the same wing that Tibbetts was in when they dropped the bomb.
I got you.
And now he's over at Whiteman, not that far away. Yeah, that's amazing about the stealth. It's like when they go from Whiteman, and then they fly anywhere in the world. They get refueled on the way there and the way back. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's a wanted to share this with you before we take a break. There's a series on YouTube. It's done by a couple of historians. It's basically, they did a series called World War I, where what they did every week, they gave a weekly update on the war, you know, on that date 100 years ago. Well, they started one for World War II, and they started it like in 2019, and it's just now wrapping up. And what they do is each week, here's what happened this week in World War II. And they go into it. They get historical references, authors, and things like that. I'm looking forward now to watching the one that'll probably be out in a couple of weeks. Because when is August the 6th? Either next Saturday or the following Saturday, they'll probably cover the bombing. And I'm just looking forward to see what they say about Colonel Tibbetts. So,
yeah. I just finished reading a biography of Eisenhower, and what an incredible person and one of the most important figures, definitely of the 20th century, being Supreme Allied Commander. And in the book, they talk about what if they had chosen someone else. The whole war could have turned out differently. It was only Ike that could really put together the invasion to recapture Europe.
Archetypical political general.
Yeah, and it was really a good president. Didn't get a lot of high marks, but was a good president, and I was reading about how he was really close with Truman. Truman tried to talk him into running for president in 48 rather than Truman himself.
Yeah.
But in 52, when he did run, he ran as a Republican, Truman as a Democrat, said some things that were critical just because of the campaign, and he's like, the day after the election, so what, let's all go. But Eisenhower, didn't being a military man and not being subject to that kind of criticism publicly and whatever, he finally forgave him in both of their post-presidencies.
A little trivia item. I was born on Ike's inauguration day.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, wow, isn't that something?
Yeah, but getting back to how the war would have concluded, I mean, there's all sorts of ways that you can go. You could say maybe it was different and we would have gotten to Berlin faster. Maybe it would have gone horribly wrong with the egos, not just of Patton, but Montgomery. Yeah, who knows?
I have a book, and it's called Undelivered Speeches. And one of them is Eisenhower had a speech, if D-Day had failed, where he took full responsibility and apologized and resigned and whatever. Thank God he never had to give it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he knew what the stakes were, absolutely.
Wow. Oh, sure. We're coming
and
up.
These elaborate deceptions that they went through, you know, to drop dummies that look like paratroopers or to set up, you know, like a fake port type of, you know, to try to trick the Nazis into work. They knew it was coming from somewhere.
Right.
But thank God they didn't completely. But still, those guys had hit the beaches. And Jack pointed out last time we were on the radio, most people don't know this, but some of those landing craft were made in Quincy Bay.
Yeah, we talked about that. And, you know, for the last couple of years of the war, they were made down there. So, yeah, it's amazing stuff. We'll get into a lot more of this. It's 9:30. We need to take a break. We need to get you caught up on the first report of commodity prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. We'll do that, and we'll get back to this discussion with Chuck Scholes and Jack Freiberg. It's on the way here on WTAD. Nine 9:33, time now for our first update on commodity prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Merck. We go up to the IRSA Farmers Co-op for the latest. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, everyone. We will have a limited update here due to computer issues, but September corn is up 4 cents at 395. December corn is up 4.5 at 409.5. March corn is up 4.5 at 423. Nearby August soybeans are up 6.5 cents at 1105. November beans are up 4 cents at 1047. January beans are up 4 cents at 1061. Nearby September wheat is up 19 cents at 554. December wheat is up 19 cents at 579. And next July wheat is up 15 cents at 613. Thank you and stay tuned for your next update.
Thank you so much for that update, Scott, at 934. Back to the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee. And in studio is Chuck Scholes and Jack Freiberg. And you guys haven't heard, I don't think. There's a company out there called CrowdStrike. And what they do is they provide cybersecurity services to a lot of big companies. Well, they were updating, they were providing a Windows update to their clients, and it was a bad update. And it caused problems. It caused outages for Microsoft and for Windows 365, their cloud-based services. Some computers were showing blue screens of death, where it's just like, yeah, you need to call somebody, basically. And it's been affecting schools, airports, border crossings, as we said. Adams County Courthouse is closed because it affected them. They're a CrowdStrike client as well. So that's what's going on. And apparently, Mercer Farmers Co-op is having, maybe the people that provide them with the information, they may be a CrowdStrike member as well. So I'll find out when I do my local reports a little bit later on. So that's what's going on with that. So, yeah, welcome to 2024.
I think the State Board of Elections. Well, hopefully I'll get that rectified pretty quick because, you know, the courthouse is a good example.
Yeah.
It's all digitized nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's a few old dinosaurs like me that still use a yellow legal pad and scratch away with my paper calendar, but when you go into court, it's all going to be digital.
True. Yeah, yeah. The county office holders are closed. The courts are closed. But like 911, the sheriff's department, those critical services, those are running okay.
Good.
Those are running okay. Health department is kind of limited. Probably just call ahead first for folks if you need to go to the health department today. So just to keep that in mind. All righty, we are talking bicentennial. We are talking history. And alongside with Chuck and Jack, who are both involved with the Bicentennial Commission, we got into a list last time that you guys were here about industrialists and inventors. And I learned a lot about stuff, including the Browning family, who founded the Browning Firearms Company and so much more. But there's just so much more on this list that you guys compiled. Thank you for putting us on there as well. Our first broadcast in 1925.
Coming up on your centennial.
Yes, yes.
Do you have a lot planned for that?
We are in the works on that, yeah. We are in the works on that.
That has to be very early in broadcasting, 1925.
It was in the first 5 years of that because the first radio station was KDKA in Pittsburgh in 1920. And it was, like any new industry, it was the Wild West back then because you know how you have certain AM stations that stay high-powered 24 hours a day, like KMOX in St. Louis.
Sure.
They're like that. But, well, back then, nobody was regulating it, so everybody just kind of did whatever.
Sure.
You know, and
well, you guys have a strong signal. Now, speaking of KMOX, Robert Hyland, who was a legendary guy at KMOX, really on a national level. He worked here, didn't he?
I believe
he was part of WTAD Lee Enterprises, I believe.
Briefly, it may have been before that, but back in the day, he lived in the other side of this building.
Is that right?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, yeah, he lived there for a little bit before, you know, moving on to finding fame and fortune and moving down to St. Louis and becoming a CBS vice president. So
I'm sure there were others that came through here, though.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them we've got on the walls here in the studio that, you know, folks come in. Of course, everybody remembers Hal Barton.
Absolutely.
Just from the crowds he would generate, just from going outside and broadcasting and doing Man on the Street and you know, broadcast from Buter's Bread and just all of that.
If the phone rang between 12 and 1... and you picked it up and said, Pepsi, please.
Yep.
You won a cooler of ice-cold Pepsi Cola.
Yep. Yep, you did.
And that was Hal Barton calling. And Hal would, these little ladies would say, oh, Hal, we love your show. What was that, ma'am? we love your show. I'm sorry I didn't catch that. We think you have such a great show. Oh, thank you so much. He was a master.
What a Quincy promoter.
Oh, my God. And, you know, everyone knows he was a one-armed guy who was the best one-armed golfer that I've ever played with. And I still tell the story. My dad, my Uncle Richard, who at that time was Chief Judge of the 8th Judicial Circuit, and Hal Barton, and what was then the first tee at Cedar Crest, I think it's number 6 now, but out of bounds to your left on the north, cornfield. Hal has this kind of elaborate backswing, you know, and he whips that around and duck hooks it right in the cornfield. So he re-tees, puts another ball down, snaps it again right into the cornfield. So my uncle says, hey, Hal, you want a little advice? And he said, sure, Judge, what do you think I'm doing wrong? He said, too much right hand, which, you know,
I thought
when you're speaking to a one-armed person, my father and I were looking for a bush that we could hide behind. But Hal actually thought it was very funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He and my uncle, when he was running, my uncle was running for judge in 1964 in 8 counties in Western Illinois. Mm-hmm. He buys a half hour on Channel 7, which was part of WTAD and Lee Enterprises, and does a half hour with Hal Barton interviewing him. Primitive early TV advertising, but he was kind of a pioneer. He was the first guy to ever put up yard signs. Yeah. And now they're ubiquitous. Oh, my God, yeah.
Wasn't Hal a city tennis champion several times over as well?
That I don't know.
I don't know that either.
For some reason, that stuck in my mind more than golf. So
well,
for some
his
reason,
son Mike was beloved by all of us kids that grew up in Quincy. With
sure,
Mike went to every CYO game.
Sure,
knew every kid.
Yeah, he was the consummate Quincy sports fan.
Yeah, yeah, oh, exactly. And yeah, we tried that briefly in the 90s again. I remember that. So yeah, yeah, we're just trying to get people to say Pepsi, please. So I remember that as well.
Well,
so.
Why not?
Sure. Sure, exactly.
Pepsi kind of town. Pepsi is donating 10,000 rulers that Jack Freiberg's Education Committee has reduced from, what did you start with, like 600-some historical
like
points? Had to get it down to 32 that will fit on a 12-inch wooden ruler. So we're going to hand every school kid in Adams County, public, private, rural, Quincy, wherever, they're all going to get the history of Adams County in a timeline, but it's in a form that instead of just giving them a paper that they're going to pitch at the end of the day, it's going to be on a wooden ruler. Because, you know, in the history, recorded history of mankind, Scott, no one has ever thrown away a 12-inch wooden ruler.
That's right.
So those will show up 50 years from now. And, oh, yeah, I got that back in the bicentennial. But, yeah, they've been so generous with us. And because they want to do the right thing for the community and support what's good and what enhances our quality of life. So we're really grateful to Pepsi and to Napides and to Quincy Recycle and Quincy Farm Products. Like we said yesterday, it was Liberty Bank. Who knows what it'll be next, but people have been extremely generous. I think they see the value in let's celebrate our county values, our ethics that have gotten us to where we are.
Any estimate on when you think those rulers are going to come out?
I'm not 100% certain because we have to get the final ruler put together. I'm hoping in the next couple months.
Our colleague Reg Ankrum is polishing up the final version, which has been finally approved by Jack's committee. So, yeah, I think, well, I don't know when we'll have them to hand out, but I think that's going to be fun. I think Jack and I will go along for that.
When you first said reduced, I thought for a second, I thought you were talking about the size of the ruler.
Oh, we wanted to do a bigger ruler
no.
because it's so hard to get it down to 32 items.
Because,
but
you know, like
the school
this,
said no
like,
way.
No.
You know, there's so much to
they didn't want weapons. They didn't want it to fit in the backpack and fit in the desk.
They did with a literal yardstick. Yeah, yeah, I got it.
And who knows, maybe we'll do a yardstick. Nobody ever throws those away either.
Nope.
The history of Adams County is so rich. You know, we couldn't really reduce it down to that level without a lot of discussion. Boy, we've had a lot of discussion about
but
that.
But we
too.
Also will have a timeline that we're going to take throughout the county. It'll be at the Liberty Fall Festival, Clayton Old Settlers. And we're not as constricted, obviously, as we're with the 12-inch ruler, because we're going to have a big wraparound on the back of a semi. And we'll also have a permanent timeline on the courthouse lawn.
Nice.
But, you know, things like the category here in this industrialist inventors, you know, as you can see, there's like 50 people that are on there, and these are all significant things in the history of Adams County. Well, obviously, we can't include all those on that ruler, but we want to make sure that these are all noted because, frankly, they're worth noting.
Right, right. Like, not as quite a big a name now as it used to be, but, I mean, in 1901, Arthur Pitney.
Yes, Pitney Bowes.
Patent for the postage meter.
Born and raised in Quincy. Okay, left here when he turned 18, went to St. Louis, was the one who designed that, was really the engineering part of it. Bowes was the sales part of it, and Pitney kind of went kind of into obscurity over that. Bowes was the one who really ran with the show. I don't know where that is as an industry now, but I know back in the day when I had my insurance agency, we used Pitney Bowes equipment all the time.
Yeah, it was industry standard.
Exactly.
Arthur Pitney was disabled, too. He had a mobility issue. I think he had, perhaps it had polio or had a bad leg. But anyway, overcame quite a bit. And, yeah, we should learn his story. We haven't done enough with Thomas Baldwin either. I wouldn't say he invented the parachute, but he might have popularized it because he was bold enough to jump out of his balloon.
Well, he was an interesting guy.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
First of all, he started working. He was a trapeze artist originally.
He would hang from the basket of the balloon.
And he would do this stuff from the basket of the balloon and what have you. So he was
crowned heads of Europe, performed all over.
I mean, he was a daredevil. Yeah. And needless to say, you know, then he went up and put together a parachute, which at that time was totally a death-defying event, jumping from that hot air balloon with this parachute on and landing safely to do that. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the show you showed up for in those days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Absolutely. And he had Baldwin Park, which was some amazing, you know, a racetrack. That's where the circus would perform when the circus would come to town, you know, they came in on Front Street. So the whole circus went down Main Street, and every little kid in Quincy was sitting on the curb there, and here came the elephants and then the lions in their cages. And they went all the way out to 30th to Baldwin Park, which is where they would perform. But Baldwin Park, Jack, I think it was 30th to 36th, Main to State.
It was quite an area out there. There was no doubt about it. You know, and Joe Bonansinga was just a huge proponent of the circus. I mean, you know, one of the times, and was this the early 60s, that Joe talked about it all his life, about when they were doing that kind of display, you know, that a parade down Main Street, Joe got to ride on an elephant at the head of the parade and just was ecstatic over that.
I'm sure he was.
When I was mayor, Joe rode an elephant into the big top. I rode on one, too, just because he asked me to do it. Joe loved the circus. He loved the riverboats, especially the Calliopes. You know, of course, he loved Rotary, loved Salvation Army, and Quincy
University.
College. Yeah. And so, Joe always told me, you know, next to City Hall, which was St. Peter's Church back then, the next one to the west is an empty lot now. Joe was born there. Upstairs in July, the window was open and a parade was going on and there was a band, and his mother always told him, you know, that's the first sounds he heard was a brass band. But he was a talented musician himself, and at age 16, which would have been for him 1926, he performed at the Washington Theater as part of the Pit Band for some big names like Jack Benny, the Marx Brothers, you know, Hampshire Street in those days had about 5 vaudeville theaters that were big time. So, you know, if you're touring the country as they all were, this was, you know, St. Louis to Chicago, you're going to stop in Quincy. They had most of the big vaudeville performers came through here, and Hampshire Street was kind of the Great White Way back then.
Isn't that funny how things recycle themselves? Because that's what the Washington Theater wants to do now.
Yes.
It's just basically be, if you've got acts that are coming from St. Louis to Chicago or the Quad Cities, it's like, hey, stop here for a day, which is a great idea. It really is.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask again about something. So basically, the whole area where Quincy High School is now, where Baldwin Elementary, all the way to State, that was a park at one time?
That was a park. It was privately owned. And there was, you know, I'm pretty sure quite a bit of gambling that took place there. I wouldn't doubt if you could get a drink there during Prohibition as far as that goes, too. But it was a big sporting thing, and they had harness racing, which was huge back then.
Yeah, because there's several pictures that are harness racing pictures of out there, and the crowds are just unbelievable. I mean, they fill the place up.
Well, you go by 16th and Main, the Quincy Museum there, those two cast iron black dogs, those came from Baldwin Park, but they were originally part of Bosco Bell, which was General James Singleton. That was out on Columbus Road somewhere, and I believe it burned down, and Baldwin got a hold of those. And then for years they were on Aldo Boulevard, and now they got a nice home at 16th and Main.
Wow.
My granddaughters like to get on top and ride those.
I'm sure. It's just funny how things change, because where the coach house is now in that whole block at 24th.
That was a baseball field.
Yeah, it's a baseball diamond.
Bluebird.
Yeah, in the 40s, early 50s. Yeah, I remember that, too. So.
Oh, yeah, and we had a lot of good baseball players for the Bicentennial. We're going to have to foment a huge argument on who was the greatest athlete in Adams County, who was the best baseball player. You know, we got the Rushels.
Yeah, we do.
But Quincy had Jim Finnegan. Fritz Ostermuller, who's now somewhat controversial because he was depicted as being racist in the Jackie Robinson movie. But, yeah, we can go way back with baseball. But just, you know, we've had a lot of professional athletes, and I think it's a good argument. I really would be an advocate for Karen Kemner.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone achieved the top of their sport like she did.
Yeah.
You know, D.A. Wireman, my high school classmate, great guy, he's done so much for us in Quincy and still wonderful. But, you know, he won five times on the pro tour. But he wasn't like, you know, the Ryder Cup, whereas Karen was the Olympics three times.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best you could do for women's volleyball is to be on the Olympic team.
Exactly.
She played all over, you know, Japan, Brazil, Italy. I faced off against her one time, and she signed a T-shirt for me, said, "Mayor, you dominated the net." But in reality, I was crouching, covering my, you know, my old German head here, because I didn't want to have, like, a Voight imprinted across my forehead. She could dunk a basketball. I mean, she's quite an athlete.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a wonderful person.
Crouching, you know, getting ready for the return of serve. Those are just semantics, aren't they? I mean, it's 9:51. We need to take a break. We'll do that, and we'll come back with some final thoughts here with Chuck and Jack here on the Mary Griffith Show on WTAD. Welcome back to the Mary Griffith Show. Scott Hardy in for Mary on this Friday, July 19th, a gorgeous day. Hope you get out and enjoy it. We're talking Quincy and Adams County history with a couple of guys who know it and made it. Chuck Scholes, Jack Freiberg, guys, welcome back as well.
Yeah, well, good to be
here, Scott. I poke fun, but I ought to butter you up from time to time, too.
Okay.
No, really ought to.
We'll accept that.
I thought that you might. But one thing that we wanted to talk about is, in fact, everybody kind of, through good marketing on their part, everybody thinks, you know, probably the oldest company in Quincy is Knapheide Manufacturing because, you know, 1848 and Westphalia, you know, Westrasse, you know, all that. But actually, Jack, there's a company older than them.
Comstock Castle. Comstock Castle, founded in 1846, is definitely the oldest stove company in the United States and highly likely the oldest stove company in the world, which needs to be noted.
It is still in business here in Quincy.
Yeah.
Quincy at one time was known as the stove capital of the world. Later on in the 19th century, Excelsior Stove took up blocks. There's some old watercolors of that somewhere around. It shows how huge that was. But, yeah, it was a big part of our industrial base at one time with stoves.
Yeah, and my mom briefly worked for Monogram Stove way back in the day, which was another large one here. But at one time, and again, this is the time when Illinois was considered the West, Mm-hmm. Okay. The ads on a lot of those stoves would be the largest stove manufacturing city in the West, which I find remarkable.
So they just had that concert down next to All America Park. Mm-hmm. That's where Monogram Stove was. That was a big company.
Well, yeah, and I imagine that you had to be because, you know, you're spread out because they were probably doing the steel work right there, weren't they?
Well, Modern Iron Works was here in town,
and
too.
And Mount Michaelman Steel, one of our oldest companies.
And, yeah. So there were large foundries here, too. I mean, it's amazing, really, as the amount of industrial works that we had here that date back to, most of them are just slightly post-Civil War.
Yeah. And you see that in Quincy's architecture and so forth. People wonder, you know, where'd all that money come from? Well, you know, we had our own robber barons, so to speak. I mean, captains of industry. There was no income tax back in the 19th century. And so, yeah, some large fortunes were accumulated. And you see it on Main, you see it in the East End Historic District, but you could also see it in the north part of Quincy because in those days, you know, on North 6th, 7th, 8th, well, really over to 3rd and 4th, there were beautiful homes, some of which are still there and have been restored. Others need a lot of work. But, obviously, we're positioned as we are on the river, we're not going to grow to the west, right? So everything became further and further east, and you can see the architectural styles go. You know, you got your Greek Revival and Queen Anne, and then you get further east, and you're getting into the 20th century with Prairie Style and Frank Lloyd Wright and so forth.
All of which were done in that period, you know, right around 1900.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't really restore them. They had been preserved very well by...
And that's one of the things that I went to the pool tournament here that was on national business at Oakley mm-hmm. Lindsay last week, and I always go if I'm at those things. What's your impression of Quincy? I mean, I talked to a guy from Seattle a long time. He says your homes here are unbelievable. Those were the first words out of his mouth, and it's things that we take for granted.
Yeah.
But when you go to an event like that where you're bringing people in, and this is, you know, this is their first impression of Quincy, that's almost always the singular answer.
So when President Clinton came, when we're mapping out the motorcade, I said, as soon as you get to 54th Street, you're going over to Main Street, and we're coming in on Main Street, you know, Broadway, generic. We had two buses of press. Mm-hmm. And I talked to some of the volunteers that were taking care of those guys, and they were getting comments like, did we just drive onto a Walt Disney set here? Does Beaver Cleaver live around the block? You know what? But, and of course, that's exactly what the White House wanted was, even though we spell Main Street with an E in this town, you know, the whole Main Street, Mid-America, Washington Park, the whole deal.
That leads into sometime I need to talk about how Quincy was designed. You know, how the streets were designed, because this is one city you should never get lost in.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And, of course, Maine is spelled the way it is because of the other states, like Jersey.
Our New England founders.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
this simple.
Hampshire, Vermont.
Center exactly. is states.
Exactly.
North end is trees.
In alphabetical order.
South end is presidents.
It's presidents, yeah.
First street starts at the river.
Yeah.
How more and simple can you be?
Exactly.
Because of our namesake, America's greatest ex-president John Quincy Adams, Adams Street comes between Monroe and Jackson and not right after Washington. So John Adams, second president of the United States, we skipped him. We're going with number six, John Quincy. So he didn't have two Adams Streets.
So if you ever wondered why Adams Street seemed maybe out of place, it's not. It's just the different president. Guys, always a pleasure. So glad to have spent time with you. And if folks want to find out about the Bicentennial, just go to the website, right?
Great. Yeah. Wonderful.
That's a place to start.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure to be in with you guys and be here for the 2 weeks. Mary will be back on Monday. Stay tuned. The Ramsey Show is next.